Welcome to Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. Hello, Chicago, and welcome to another effulgent episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. Coming up on today's podcast, we have an interview with Anish Jethmalani. He will be talking to Ann Nicholson Weber about Eclipse Theater's One Playwright, One Season. Also, Tom Williams brings us another audio review. And of course, as always, Chicago's theater news. So sit back, relax, and get ready to talk some theater. Hello, Chicago, and welcome to another episode of Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of August 14th, 2006. Christy Cates, star of Chicago's Wicked, is set to perform in a rare solo performance. She has performed on Broadway, at the Tony Awards, and she currently stars as Elphaba, the Wicked Witch of the West, which is the lead role in Chicago's blockbuster production of Wicked. Well, now Arlington Heights Metropolis Performing Arts Center has announced a rare solo performance by Cates for one night, and I do repeat, one night only. And that night will be Monday, October 9th. At 7:30. This will be your chance to join the Wicked star for a musical excursion through her favorite numbers, some old standards, some lesser-known tunes, some touching ballads, and of course, the showstopper. The evening is being billed as being full of stories, laughters, and a few surprises, and also a special guest. Remember, this is on Monday, October 9th at 7:30. Do whatever you can to get on out to the Arlington Heights Metropolis Performing Arts Center and watch a rare solo performance by a hot Broadway star. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, on Tuesday, August 29th, single tickets will go on sale for Denmark, which will be the Victory Gardens Theater inaugural production at the new Biograph Theater. Denmark is a world premiere historical drama by Playwrights Ensemble member Charles Smith, and it will be directed by artistic director Dennis Zasek. For more information about the countdown for the fall 2006 opening of the Victory Gardens Theater at the Biograph, check out Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. Silk Road Theater Project is seeking many volunteer positions for their fall production of Caravaggio, directed by Dale Heinen. Now, these internships will be running from about August 27th through November 26th of this year. For more information, get in touch with the Silk Road Theater Project, which is located at the Chicago Temple, 77 West Washington Street in Chicago, Illinois. Well, thank you very much for listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.
Hello, this is Tom Williams. You are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's review podcast. Here is my review of The Bloody Romantic. The Bloody Romantic by Greg Beam and Eric Pullen, produced by Broken Compass Theater at Chicago Dramatists. The Bloody Romantic is a serviceable dark comedy. The initial offering from University of Chicago grads who founded the Broken Glass Theater Company is based on the company's mission statement, which reads, "Most exciting art arises from a process of continual experimentation. No preconceptions or preformulations." How true that is in their first play. The Bloody Romantic, written by Greg Beam, who also stars as Vince, and Eric Pullen, is a dark comedy with a bizarre ending that sure stretched the boundaries of relationship plays. This quirky comedy has gay lovers, with one switching back to lust after a woman, a jealous husband dressed in a safari suit spying on his wife, and a cheating partner who has an affair with his new boss. The sensually raw work has men groping each other, a man and a woman playing ritualized foreplay games to the tune of acerbic wit, stinging dialogue, which redefines screwball comedy. This is a provocative show. The sexual disorientation has Vince, played by Greg Beam, a chef and lover to Frank, who's played by Brian Kilbourne, having sex with his cooking student, Gloria, played by Kathy Carlson, who was also Vince's ex-wife. Now picture this, you have two gay lovers where the one is a lawyer and he's having an affair with his new boss. The other stay-at-home chef also teaches cooking, but he does much more when the lady comes for lessons. What she pays for is having sex, and the lady just happens to be Vince's ex-wife. When Frank lands a job with Ben, who's the flamboyant lawyer, James Errico, the two end up having sex. After several mysterious interludes with a brown-clad man in safari outfit complete with pit helmet and double-barrel shotgun, we have a funny, whacked-out sex comedy filled with romance and betrayal. This show zips along, rendering many laughs with a large dose of sensuality and terrific comic turns from Kathy Carlson and Greg Beam. Eventually, the play takes a crazy twist that is surprising but plausible. The Broken Compass Theater Troupe has produced a lighthearted black comedy that is both engaging and weirdly likable. It sure is a twist on gay relationship comedies with a little violence thrown in. I like this funny show. I'll be keeping an eye on this promising company because they vow not to follow the rules. Thank God. My rating on this show, recommended. It is at Chicago Dramatists, which is at 1105 West Chicago Avenue in Chicago. The running time is 95 minutes with intermission. It runs through August 20th. The phone number for more information, 773-772-0712. Tickets are $15. That's 773-772-0712. This is Tom Williams reminding you, go see a play this week. Thank you.
Hello, you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. I'm your host for this week's segment, Ann Nicholson Weber, and I'm talking today to Anish Jetmalani, who is the artistic director of Eclipse Theater Company and also the director of the company's current production, which is Spinning into Butter by Rebecca Gilman. And that is playing at Victory Gardens through September 3rd. Thanks so much for joining us, Anish.
Thanks for having me.
I'm wondering if you could start by talking a little bit about the unique mission of Eclipse Theater Company.
Sure. Eclipse Theater Company is the only theater company in the Midwest to feature the works of one playwright in one season. Essentially, what we do is we showcase three or four works by a single playwright within the course of a calendar year. And we operate a little differently from other theater seasons, since they go usually on a schedule of from September through May. We actually operate starting in March, producing our first show in the spring, and then having a show in the summer, and then concluding in the fall, so that we can have our audiences identify the single playwright within the calendar year.
So one playwright, one calendar year.
Exactly.
I'm interested to know what is the purpose of that particular structure, what you learn or what your audiences learn by following a particular playwright through an entire season?
Well, we hope to give our audiences a unique journey within a playwright's world. essentially what we want to do is we want to take them into the world of the playwright and be able to show the differences between their plays, the similarities based on theme, characterizations, structure, so that they can really get an enriched experience at the end of that season, so that they know a little bit more about where the playwright is coming from within the parameters of attacking different issues that come up in the playwright's plays all the time.
I guess you have to really mean it if you're going to spend an entire year with someone. You have to really like their work.
Yes, I think so. Or, you know, I mean, the other thing is that we have audience members who are not necessarily familiar with the playwright that we are featuring, and we invite them to come in and see one or two of their plays. And we've had audience members who have actually fallen in love with that writer's works as a result of that.
Maybe you could talk a little bit about the artistic side of this strategy, shall we say. What the members of the ensemble learn or do differently as a result of spending so long with one playwright's work?
Well, for the ensemble, we have an ensemble of about 16 members. And for us, it's a great opportunity to become dramaturgs in one sense. And that what I mean by that is that we do a lot of the research. We really dive into the playwright's works, and we become more or less the experts on the playwright's works. And it also affords us the opportunity to be able to share a little bit more, not only with ourselves, but with our audience as well, in terms of just operating outside of the productions themselves. Meaning that if we are participating in any kind of discussions with our audience members or symposiums, that we have a little bit more knowledge of that playwright.
I would think that doing three plays by a single playwright would be enough to catch the attention of the playwright if you're doing a living playwright.
Absolutely. We've been afforded the great opportunity to have our playwrights visit us. In the beginning, we were featuring playwrights like Jean Cocteau and Tennessee Williams and Lillian Hellman, so we were feeling their spirit, more or less. When we started focusing on living playwrights, which we don't exclusively do, but we have been doing that for some time, we've had playwrights that we've featured in the past, including Romulus Linney, John Guare, Keith Redeen, who have all come to visit us, and they've also spent a lot of time with us in our rehearsal process, in the productions themselves, participating in talkbacks and symposiums. So we've been really fortunate to have them play an active role within our mission.
So you can really go deep into the background and the style of whoever you're focusing on.
Absolutely. And it also gives our audience an opportunity to meet the playwrights, to talk to them, ask them questions that they might have about their works or their style. We feel that we have a great opportunity to connect the audience with the playwright when they're here.
So is it intimidating or in any way complicating to have a playwright present during rehearsals?
It's intimidating for the actors because you don't want to mess it up when you're rehearsing the scenes or the play in front of the playwright. It's a great honor, and it's a great thing to have them there because they can really give you an opportunity to maybe look at things in a way that you haven't been able to look at before. And also, one of the things that has happened for us is that we've had a playwright come in that were totally satisfied with the work. We didn't want to make any changes whatsoever. They come into the rehearsal process and they were like, oh, I don't know, maybe we can tweak that or tweak this or change that or change that. And that's happened all the time, that they're never satisfied with their work. They always want to be making, you know, little tweaks, little changes here and there to give the audience a little bit more of an enriched experience with their work. And I think that speaks to them as artists, that they're always constantly working on their craft. We had that experience with Rebecca this year, Rebecca Gilman, who's our featured playwright, who came in and made very subtle changes in the script for both The Sweetest Swing in Baseball and Spinning into Butter.
Does the playwright give notes, participate in production decisions, or is the only kind of work that you're talking about changing his or her own script?
No, the playwrights have given us feedback in terms of choices that the director has made or production elements. We always welcome that kind of feedback from them. And usually those notes, you know, the feedback goes to the director. We had one situation where Romulus Lenny was here for a production of A Woman Without a Name that we did a few years ago. And he actually took his time to talk to the actors and say, you know, don't spend too much time working up there on stage. You know, it's called a play for a reason. So definitely have a good time doing what you're doing and enjoy it. And so that was really good for the actors to hear that from him.
Well, let's talk a little more specifically about the work of Rebecca Gilman, who is this year's playwright, as you've said. And I know that you've already closed the first of those three shows, which was Sweetest Swing in Baseball, and you're in the middle of the second, Spinning into Butter, and then in the fall you'll be doing Boy Meets Girl. My first question is how having done Sweetest Swing might in any way have influenced how you read or how the style of the production or any other way the Spinning into Butter that you're currently mounting?
Well, we try our best to stay as text-focused as we possibly can. And what I mean by that is at least for me, for Spinning into Butter, I didn't really want to get in the way of Rebecca's writing because I think her plays are so good that they speak for themselves, and I don't really want to, you know, muddy the waters. I just want her plays to be able to be heard and seen. So for Spinning into Butter, that was sort of my focus, was to honor her play as best as we could. And I think Nat Swift, who directed Sweetest Swing in Baseball, wanted to do the same. In that production, we had a very minimalistic set. Everything was very minimal, and so we really focus on the words, we focus on the text, and we try not to get in the way of what the playwright is trying to accomplish with their work.
With each particular play, you're saying that they're different and you treat them differently.
They're different and we treat them differently in the context of how they're written. So essentially, with Sweetest Swing in Baseball, in terms of how we attacked that, we try to keep a very minimalistic approach on the production as far as putting it up, and then going into something like Spinning into Butter, which takes place in one realistic setting. You know, we try our best to increase our production values as far as having that setting, having the ambiance, having the environment in the context of fitting that playwright's world in honoring the text. So it all comes back to the text.
Yeah, having seen Spinning into Butter, I can tell listeners that the set is really striking, very, very specific. You're right there in a college professor's office with Gothic windows and stone walls, and it's quite beautiful. And very realistic, unlike, as you say, the set for Sweetest Swing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something you're saying in the text of those two plays, one that demands an abstract set, one that demands a much more specific set.
And companies who take on the Sweetest Swing in Baseball have had their own interpretation of the play, and they'll set it in different locations, whether it be at the psychiatric hospital or the art gallery, which is the two primary locations where the play takes place. For us, we didn't have either one of those there. We only had a couple of different benches, and we really set it sort of in the abstract of what's going on in Dana's world as far as two personalities clashing with one another. In that play, she takes on the persona of Daryl Strawberry. So we were much more interested in that idea rather than sort of setting it in a realistic setting. So we felt like we could take luxury with that.
It's certainly a more whimsical play, I would say, and a lighter play than Spinning into Butter.
Yeah, it's a little bit more comedic, and I think, you know, one of the nice things that Rebecca does with all of her works is that she adds a lot of satire, a lot of wit, and she also really makes the audience feel uncomfortable at many moments, which is one of the genius things that she is able to accomplish. She really is able to sort of put this mirror in front of the audience and have them take a good look at themselves. And it's not easy when you see something like that.
Well, that takes us right to the heart of Spinning into Butter. Maybe you could talk briefly about what the themes are, and when you talk about the audience being made uncomfortable, what are you referring to?
One of the reasons I chose to take this play on as far as directing, because I work as an actor, but the issues that were brought up in the play really sort of spoke to my heart. And the issue of race is a very complicated one, and it's much bigger than these characters in this play, and it's really quite much bigger than all of us. It's a difficult issue to take on, and I think one of the things that I really appreciated about this play was that Rebecca doesn't really provide any answers. She is able to just bring the issue to the front of the stage in terms of the writing of the play, and she's really able to sort of, you know, ask the audience, you know, how do they respond to something like this, and what is it, why does this continue to be an issue in our society, why is it that it is such a problem?
Why don't you backtrack and just quickly describe the setting and the situation in the play so people understand?
Sure. The play takes place at a New England college, and it focuses on a faculty and a young dean named Sarah Daniels, who has recently started in that position. And she's originally, she comes from Chicago, from an all-African-American, believe, community college or school. And so she's been hired into this job. And what ends up happening is that she discovers that there are racial hate notes pinned to one of the African-American students' doors of his dormitory. And so this sets everything in motion with the play. And basically it throws everyone into a tailspin in terms of the faculty and trying to figure out what are they going to do to sort of calm down the fire that has just started with these racial hate notes. So one of the faculty members thinks about putting a forum together. I mean, there are all sorts of band-aid solutions that are thrown out there to kind of calm down the situation. And as you go through the play, Sarah, who's sort of at the center of all of this storm, is she begins to sort of look inwards and becomes a little bit more aware of who she is in all of this. And as an audience, you sort of follow her through the play and make some interesting discoveries about her, which I don't want to give away, so you'll have to come and see it.
Carrie Richland, who plays Sarah, yeah, delivers a monologue in the second act, which I think probably everybody experiences as the climax of the play, although it comes rather early in the second act.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be interested to hear you describe a little bit about how you and she approached that monologue, what work you did, and what obstacles you may have had to work through. It's a very, I would say, transgressive piece. Things are said on stage that are quite taboo. So talk about how you worked on that moment, or actually, what is it, about 5 minutes? It seems quite long.
Yeah, it's a pretty extensive monologue, and it's tough for any actor to take on, and I admire Carrie for putting in the hard work to try to tackle that, and she has done a marvelous job. It was a tough scene. When I looked at that scene, when I read it for the first time, I was like, oh my God, how are we going to do this? But she and I talked at length about the scene, and I basically talked to her about looking at it in terms of, how do we feel about what she's talking about, and how would anyone as a human being naturally sort of, speak these words, because they are, harsh things that she is saying. But she's being honest with herself, and she's being honest with the audience at that very moment. And I essentially, we worked on it quite a bit in terms of breaking it down and breaking down the monologue and sort of attacking it each part at a time. And really sort of being able to, we did a lot of table work in the beginning, and what I mean by that is we sat down and really sort of asked questions. And I think that's how we sort of attacked the scene, was just asking questions about each and every beat. And with the beat, I mean by just basically breaking up the monologue and attacking each part of it. And that's how we accomplished it. And I think just her, by doing it every night and by doing it in front of an audience every night, gets her sort of motivated to go on and attack the scene as best as she can.
I would think the first time she did it in front of an audience would have been frightening.
You would think so, but for her it was exhilarating, because mm-hmm. that monologue, and when you come to see the play, you'll know what we're talking about. it provokes such a response from the audience because it really gets to what Rebecca has pointed up in this play. And it's such a revelation, you know, it just hits you from nowhere. And for her as an actor, you know, she really is able to enjoy the fact that the audience is right there with her and is listening to her. And that's, you know, that's an actor's job, is to be seen and heard. So she feels pretty good about being able to give Rebecca's words life at that point, because that's exactly what that monologue is supposed to accomplish.
Yeah, when the night I saw it, there was not a peep from the audience. Everybody was absolutely transfixed for that entire speech.
And pretty much every performance, that's the way it's been, because it's a hard one to really swallow and to digest.
The audience the night I went, actually it was a matinee, was quite integrated. And I'm interested to know, I know you've been doing some talkbacks with the audience, at least you did in the previews. Mm-hmm. Have you gotten different reactions from audience members that broke down along racial lines?
It's interesting. We've had a few African Americans come to see the show. During one of the previews, we've actually had a few of the African-American audience members stand up and applaud. And you wouldn't think that would be the case after hearing some of the things that you hear in this play. But I had one lady come up to me and said, you know, thank you for putting this, giving life to this play, because I think it's an issue that needs to be heard. And it's everything what theater should be doing, and that is to sort of provoke a response, promote discussion, and hopefully, you know, activate change, you know. So we've been getting responses like that, and we've also been getting responses of the fact that, you know, well, I think this is one-sided, you know, I don't think it's a fair and balanced sort of look at the issue of race.
You're talking about from white audiences?
From the white audiences, mm-hmm. Yeah. There have been a few who believe that, you know, when you talk about racism, it's racism on both sides, and not just from, you know, from a white perspective. So we've gotten, you know, responses from all across the board, and I think it's going to continue to do that. But what the most important thing is that it's getting people talking, and Rebecca has said in the past that, you know, the real third act of this play is the discussion of the audience members, whether that be in our post-show discussion or whether they go out and have a couple of drinks or have dinner, they're talking about the play. And that's the third act of this show. And that's the third act you don't get to see, because that's the discussion that you have with yourself as an audience member about how you respond to something like this.
One thing I would say about the play is that although it clearly is an issue play and it does touch on very topical and very incendiary issues, I also feel that it somehow rises above that, that there's a poetic quality to it, even though it's completely realistic, mm-hmm. that lifts it above an issue play. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't put my finger on what that is, but it's very important to me in the audience that I don't just feel like I'm being harangued or taught or proselytized. There's something bigger than that that comes into the theater.
Yeah, I think we tried our best to give this play sort of the Eclipse touch, and that is, productions could be very gritty, and they can be very, which it should be, but we wanted the audience to be able to not come away with just, you know, watching Rebecca's play, but we wanted them to be able to watch an Eclipse production of this play. And I just had some really great designers to work with who really sort of gave us sort of a painting on stage of what this world is. And I think there are other issues that also come about. You know, at one point you hear about Sarah Daniels' mother being an alcoholic. You also talk about sort of the juxtaposition between men and women working in academic institution. Also the generational gap that comes up. So there are all sorts of issues that are coming up in this play. But we wanted to sort of make it a play that had a poetic quality to it as well.
You mentioned an Eclipse aesthetic. Can you describe that?
Yeah, we Eclipse was formed in 92, and they were formed by a group of DePaul students. And while I wasn't with the company back then, from what I've seen in the past of their work, before I came in, they attacked a lot of new plays. They also put on sort of this magical realism with their plays. Also took on some avant-garde works as well. And I think they developed a certain aesthetic that they wanted to maintain, and we wanted to maintain that element from the old guard, so to speak, into our new mission of featuring the works of one playwright in one season. And so we try to put those subtle qualities to each of the plays that we're doing. Even though this year Rebecca Gilman's works are a little bit more grittier, and they kind of go exactly against that sort of that quality that I've been talking about, we try to bring sort of a poetic quality to all of the plays that we do, and maintain that aesthetic that Eclipse formed back then in 92.
We've talked a lot about Spinning into Butter. Maybe you could quickly tell us a tiny bit about Boy Meets Girl for the fall, whet everybody's appetite, and then go further forward and talk about next year's season.
Sure. Boy Gets Girl is the third play that we're doing, and this is a play that was at the Goodman back about 4 or 5 years ago. It premiered there, and the play deals with essentially a well-to-do woman who's doing great in her career, and she goes on a blind date, and essentially she's not crazy about the guy that she goes on a blind date with, but he persists on wanting to get to know her and continues to essentially stalk her. And you go into sort of the situation of what is the relationship between men and women in terms of how they deal with one another, not only in the workplace, but outside of that as well. And it's a fascinating story as far as how you follow the journey of this central character and how she deals with all of these situations that are coming up with this guy who's essentially stalking her.
Sounds like a rather dark.
It's dark. It's very dark. It's probably the darkest one that we're doing this year. And it's an interesting thing because of one common theme that comes up with all of our plays this year in the Gilman season is that there is a central female character that's dealing with situations that are surrounding her and how she sort of tackles it in the play. Next season, we'll be featuring the works of playwright Pearl Clegg. This is going to be a first for Eclipse because most of our ensemble will be taking a step back in terms of performing on stage. All the casts will be featuring African-American actors. And this was a particularly important issue for us because as a company, we strongly felt that there is a lack of diversity in theater in Chicago at the moment. And particularly, you know, we feel that a lot of cultures are not being seen on stage, a lot of voices are not being heard. And when you're trying to feature the works of one playwright in one season, it just doesn't make sense that you wouldn't feature different cultures or different voices. So we're really excited about the fact that we're able to have Pearl Clegg with us and be able to give a voice to her works next year.
Do you expect her to come to Chicago?
She will be here. She'll be here in the spring of next year when we start our first show, which will be Blues for an Alabama Sky. And she will be here as part of a festivity of inaugurating that season. Where there'll be different symposiums and different talkbacks that she will be participating in.
So even though you're an actor ensemble, next season your ensemble is going to take back seat and you're just going to be almost like a producing company. Is that right?
Essentially, I mean, we like to describe our ensemble more as a balance of actors and designers and producers and directors. So we have a pretty good balance. It doesn't mean that we're going away. We're just, most of us are not going to be on stage, but we are definitely there in terms of being in the background of trying to put these plays up on the stage. We have a few of our company members who are going to be directing the shows as well, and we will be the forefront as far as promoting this season.
Well, maybe we could just close by your giving a quick plug for Spinning into Butter. Tell us when it's showing.
Spinning into Butter runs through September 3rd at the Victory Gardens Theater, which is located at 2257 North Lincoln Avenue. It runs Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Sundays at 3 p.m. We have post-show discussions following every Sunday matinee with the exception of closing weekend, and we also have post-show discussions after Saturday evening performances up through August 12th. I encourage audience members to come to those performances if they have the opportunity to do that so that they can talk to the actors. If you want tickets, you can call 773-871-3000, or you can also buy tickets online at our website, which is eclipsetheater.com, and that's theater with an R-E. And then we'll wrap up the season with Boy Gets Girl, running November 3rd through December 17th.
Well, thanks so much, Anish. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate being here.
That was Anish Jetmalani with Eclipse Theater Company for Talk Theater in Chicago.
Thank you for listening to this effulgent episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. But before we let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote has to deal with science, and it comes from The Taming of the Shrew, Act 5, Scene 2. He that is giddy thinks the world turns round. Well, we can't thank you enough for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready to stick in your ears. So until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.